Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. In the next 30 minutes, beyond the headlines, with insight and analysis from leaders and decision makers shaping our future. So whether you're tuning in live or catching us later, stay ahead with stories that really matter. And after a day of high political drama, an online poll today as we start the show, and is the government of national unity falling apart? What do you think happens next? Three options here. The GNU survives, a reconfiguration is coming, or a collapse ahead. The trust is broken. Coming up on the program, the African National Congress on the future of the GNU, Business Unity South Africa on the economic ramifications, Investec chief economist Annabel Bishop on the Trump tariff announcements, and the United States cuts defense ties with South Africa. What impact is this going to have on the SANDF? It's Thursday, the 3rd of April. So it was a budget vote with big numbers, but even bigger political implications. While the finance minister's budget narrowly passed in Parliament, the fallout could shake the foundations of South Africa's GNU, the Government of National Unity. The Democratic Alliance, a central partner in the GNU, voting against the fiscal framework, defying repeated warnings from the African National Congress, and prompting President Ramaphosa to say the DA is now, in his words, defining itself outside the coalition. I guess the question now is, what next? Can the GNU survive this breach, or are we heading for some kind of reconfiguration or even a collapse? I'm in conversation now with the ANC's Mahlengi Bengu. Mahlengi, welcome and thank you very much indeed. So what is the ANC's position now? The DA voting against the budget despite clear warnings from the president and the finance minister. Is the ANC now treating the DA as having effectively left the GNU?
Well, the many indications are that they have indeed, as the president says, to find themselves outside of the GNU. We can't possibly imagine how will the DA stay on when they've actually litigated against the budget, or are litigating against the budget. And also, how do you administer a budget that you did not support? So it's a situation that is very untenable for the DA, especially because the DA in their negotiations shared a lot of ultimatums, what they referred to as red lines, one of which is their disagreements about the aspects of the budget, as well as wanting to negotiate policy reforms and redress policies in South Africa, weaponizing the budget discussion for that matter.
How worried should South Africans be today?
Well, South Africans should be less worried about the fact that there is vibrancy in our democracy. In fact, we also have to applaud the fact that this budget discussion and debate has really lifted the importance of money bills in ensuring that the resources of the country are spent prudently, and that there's more public participation and public opining about matters of the budget. I think that's a positive thing in our growing democracy. I say that South Africans have got to be less worried because it isn't just the ANC and the DA that are in Parliament. There are more than 10 parties in Parliament. And it remains to be seen, of course, as to how the DA itself will react, or the next steps it will take apart from taking this process to court. If that happens, the ANC will have to look at other options. You've already mentioned a number of scenarios that could potentially play out, such as the reconfiguration of government, such as another model other than the current government of national unity as we know it.
So let's be clear on that. Is the ANC now actively looking to redraw the GNU and, as you've suggested, bringing in other parties, possibly Action SA, to replace the DA's influence?
We have not taken a step in that direction yet, because we think that it is incumbent on the DA to be consistent with their messaging around this matter. And they are the ones who really, really are having the ball in their court. The ANC has consistently said that we remain committed to the government of national unity.
Are you concerned about how this current political instability, and particularly a reconfiguration or even a collapse of the GNU, could affect investor confidence, credit ratings, or even the rand?
We are concerned. We are concerned about that, because we need as much stability in this country to be able to address the challenges of inequality, to be able to finance anti-poverty programs, to also ensure that the social wage is paid to our people who are deserving people, particularly the poor, to ensure that, in fact, we have a government that can drive investments and that can play very well in the trade and industry space, and that also is seen favorably by the international community, particularly those that are interested in investing their resources in South Africa. It is of concern to us, but at the same time, what is of concern to us is that there must be continuity and stability. We must continue to fund those programs we have been funding, such as access to basic primary health care, access to basic education, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme that has already increased substantially. We must also be able to finance these infrastructure projects that are going to create jobs, because we need the kind of economic growth that is not as jobless as it is at the moment. And all of those things require resources, hence the discussion about VAT being a possibility. But what is now good with this process is that there's agreement that the ANC will take along all the other parties that supported it in passing this budget to look at other alternative revenue streams, in which case it may even offset the need for the VAT increase. So we're quite committed, and we do view it important that investors need the assurance, they need to get a positive sign. Unfortunately, President Ramaphosa, this is a matter that he is consistently seized with.
In spite of the fact that the Democratic Alliance is now litigating, is the door open, or are there plans for any further talks between the president and the leader of the Democratic Alliance?
Well, the president has already communicated to the leader of the Democratic Alliance about where we feel and where we are as the ANC. And he's said as much that their actions amount to defining themselves outside of the government of national unity. The door remains wide open on the part of the ANC.
Talking about doors being open, there is talk, some rumor about potential cooperation between the ANC and the MK party. Can you categorically either rule out or confirm the possibility of future coalition discussions with Jacob Zuma's party?
A categoric no on the part of the ANC. We rule it out
completely.
It's not in the cards.
The Democratic Alliance's decision to not support this budget came out of what it claimed was a betrayal of poorer people in South Africa, particularly as far as the implementation of an increase in value-added tax is concerned. Was there any sympathy at any time about that stance, or do you think the DA misread it?
Well, we do not believe that the DA is concerned for the poor. There is nothing in their policies that suggests so. Some of the policies they are applying where they govern in the Western Cape are not pro-poor, are anti-poor. If you look at the state of the townships and colored communities, you go to Delft, you go to Philippi, you look at the state of crime in Delft, in Philippi, in Khayelitsha. I could go on and on and on. Sewer not being picked up. There's no evidence, concrete evidence, to suggest so. In any case, we all know the economic policy perspectives of the Democratic Alliance. There's another example where they talk about opportunity instead of talking about redress. There are so many examples that one can cite. If there is concern for the poor, why is it that the Democratic Alliance has consistently litigated legislations that are about redressing the past imbalances.
I'm going to leave it there. Mahlengi Bengu speaks for the African National Congress. Thank you very much for talking to me today.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
So the national budget passing with the VAT hike in a day of high political tension. So South Africans are asking, what happens now? I want to give you a business and economic perspective on the budget vote and also the future of the Government of National Unity. And joining us is the Chief Executive Officer of Business Unity South Africa, Kulakani Mate. Kulakani, welcome. Thank you very much indeed. So BUSA's position on the ANC's unilateral handling of the budget, does it signal fiscal instability or unpredictability that maybe could deter future investment, or are you taking something positive out of it?
Well, firstly, let's just start. And good morning, Jeremy. Let's start with the fact that the budget was ultimately approved. That in itself is a step forward, because not having an approved budget would have other implications. So at least we can tick that off. It doesn't mean that we are happy with everything, but I think in the sort of broader scheme of things, that settles that matter. I mean, we know that there are still some outstanding and conditions that have been attached to the approval. I mean, I think that's just a sideshow. The fact of the matter is that the budget has been approved with a 0.5% increase on VAT. Now, of course, uncertainty is not good for business, is not good for investment. And so we always get concerned about anything that threatens uncertainty in the economy. And that's why the prolonged debates that go nowhere on the budget would not have been ideal.
I want to come back to uncertainty in just a moment, but let me just pick you up on value-added tax and BUSA's assessment of that increase. It is going to impact consumer spending and obviously downstream business performance in key sectors, something that I imagine the country can ill afford.
Indeed, the country can ill afford that. But I think one has to also take into account that there's been an attempt by the Treasury to really soften the blow of this increase. As you know, on the one hand, for those who receive social assistance, they have received higher than inflation increase. And two, there's been an increase in the number of zero-rated products, etc. So yes, there will be an impact, but not as pronounced given these measures that have been taken. Increasing taxes in an economy is never a good thing for business. And so under ideal conditions, we would not be in support of any increase in taxes. But we are where we are. And I think we need to take this on the chin and move on as a country.
Let's get back to policy uncertainty, obviously evidenced by fractured coalition support within the GNU. Surely there must be concern now within the business community about a delay in structural reforms which are urgently needed for economic growth. We can't afford any breakup of the GNU, surely.
The breakup of the GNU would not be good for the South African economy from a confidence point of view, from a stability point of view, because I think everybody was getting to understand that we have a coalition government and how it is working. So if we go back to the drawing board, I think that will be bad for confidence and stability. And so we would be very concerned about that from a business point of view.
And you'll concede that BUSA is now worried about a risk premium as far as South Africa is concerned if the GNU disintegrates. Again, let's not put the cart before the horse, but the fiscal disagreement between the two principal partners is very pronounced and many are saying intractable.
We would say that obviously in the heat, and I'll call it a heat of the moment, when all of these debates are happening and so people digging in and not moving from their original positions, one can understand that. But we would just urge politicians to really step back and realize that actually they are given an opportunity by all of us as South Africans to look after this national asset called the economy. We want them to look after it. We want them to nurture it. We want them to grow it for this generation and future generations. And so they should not take decisions. that are going to put the economy into jeopardy, because it will affect everything that happens in the country. And so that would be really our call, even as the conversations go about, is the GNU going to remain in its current form? Will it be reconfigured, etc.? Because it has consequences, and that's, we would just call for cool heads and not act with haste.
What advice is BUSA giving to its constituency who face the risk of being caught in this political crossfire and brinkmanship?
So on the one hand, we would also just advise that, yes, because we're not used to this sort of thing. For the past 30 years, we're used to the passing of the budget being a very, almost a non-event, because it, you know, it was always passed without any problem. It's not the end of the world. I mean, many countries go through these, they don't collapse. I mean, you know that in the US, they have a system where, you know, if the budget is not passed, the government shuts down, right? We don't have that, and yet we've not been down there. And that's why we would understand people being concerned, but we should not be overly concerned, because we're not there yet. Our system is a lot more, I think, balanced than that of the US. And let me say that, given all of that, you know, so we would say that this is not the end of the world. This is the beginning pains or birth pains of coalition governments. We will see more of this. It will probably settle in years to come, but this is not the end of the world.
There's also a double whammy today, because overnight we're hearing about this 30% tariff imposition on South Africa from the American government. What's the general sense in the business community today, and where do you think this leaves South Africa?
So this is, again, one of those severe headwinds that our weak economy just can ill afford. We have until now been really asking ourselves and reaching out to the US on the renewal of AGOA and South Africa's continued inclusion within that. And so to wake up to the news that we are now subject to 30% tariffs in the US is obviously very, very unfortunate, and will have severe consequences on the economy. Our access to the US market will indeed be constrained by these tariffs. But I think it's also important to note that we just have not been singled out because we are South Africa. These have been applied to many, many other nations. There are others who have been slapped with much higher tariffs than us. It doesn't make it better, but I think it's important to put it into context so that we can find sober ways of how to deal with the issues and how to handle it in our economy.
Thank you very much indeed. That is Kulakani Mate, Chief Executive Officer, Business Unity South Africa.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Overnight, US President Donald Trump announcing sweeping tariffs, including a universal 10% levy on all imports and higher rates targeting specific countries. For instance, 34% on Chinese goods, 20% on European Union imports, 30% on South Africa. Obviously, these measures sparking global concern with political ramifications for international trade dynamics and economic stability. In this context, we're going to seek insights from Annabel Bishop, Chief Economist at Investec, on how these developments might impact South Africa's economy, also the RAND, the JSE, investor sentiment, inflation, and probably most importantly, the manufacturing sector. Also, I want to ask her view on the broader implications for a potential global recession. Obviously, all of this coming on the back of the contentious budget discussion in the South African Parliament yesterday. So lots to talk about. Annabel, a very warm welcome. So given the imposition of this tariff on South African imports, firstly, how do you anticipate this might impact our export volumes and our trade balance?
Yes. Hi, Jeremy. Look, I think we certainly continue to expect that South Africa will lose its AGOA benefits. And of course, that's about 5% of our trade. That's something that we already had anticipated last month and earlier in the year as the trade relations with the United States soured quite significantly. Of course, that's a legislative decision by the US, and it gives South Africa free trade access on a number of areas into the US, particularly affecting, of course, our agricultural exports, chemical exports, and these obviously already would have had some negative effect on our GDP growth forecasts. Of course, as well, the inflationary effect in the US shouldn't be discounted from its tariff increases, and the effective tariff lift so far could be about 20% for the US on its imports. It's very varied across countries. South Africa got a 30% rise. Of course, you know, the point really is, and the president said that as well as the US, the office of the US Trade Representative, has that these tariff changes could fluctuate. They could either increase or decrease, and that the US is open to negotiation. So, Jeremy, uncertainty still persists in this regard.
Annabel, in your assessment then, what kind of influence is this going to have on foreign direct investment, particularly from countries now facing higher US tariffs? Are we going to see a reconfiguration, almost a pivot or a recalibration here?
You know, already prior to the Trump administration coming in, but obviously with expectations of the trade war escalating, we already had seen a negative impact on globalization, deglobalization, if you will. Geopolitical risk had risen substantially, and while countries still wish to do trade with each other, and there was a fair degree of resilience occurring, trade figures hadn't dropped that much. Of course, this is really a structural reconfiguration that the United States is bringing in particular the U.S. really looking to put, obviously, America first, as the U.S. says, by reshoring American jobs, you know, bringing production back to the United States. They talk about leveling the playing field for American workers and manufacturers and to expand their manufacturing base. So it really is aimed at a structural change and not something, you know, which perhaps is flimsy. The point really, of course, as well, is that while these tariff increases could fluctuate, it's going to be on an individual country basis, it really does hurt South Africa if imports into South Africa, from South Africa into the US go up by 30% and other countries only have a 10% lift, then there'd be a switch away from South Africa products for consumption in the US to other countries where the tariff change is much lower. So that, of course, as well, is the negative impact for South Africa. Jeremy, we already dropped our GDP forecast for the year to 1.3% for South Africa from 1.8% previously that we held for 2025, both on the loss of the AGOA benefits, which, as I said earlier, we built into our base case. Also the impact, as we were all waiting for the Liberation Day, as it's called, or the America First trade policy implementation, the universal tariff increase. So both of those have really are likely to hit global growth around the world and South Africa. And of course, as you said, investment had already struggled. Fixed investment had already started to struggle around the world. I think the bottom line is that there has been polarization in global trade. There's also been geopolitical tensions rise. And all of that does really imply that the move to onshoring and friendshoring away from globalization has quickened.
You talk about global growth and the impact. There have been a lot of gloomy predictions overnight about the world moving towards a global recession. Is it too soon to call that?
I think that the risks have increased. I do feel that the US administration believes that the tariff adjustment mechanisms are very fluid and that they're levers that they can pull to achieve a number of different objectives, perhaps you know, avoiding a US recession by making changes quick enough in time. I don't know if that is necessarily as easy as that. We feel instead that there is obviously the risk to sentiment, which is already coming through, if not, you know, seeing the risk to the hard numbers, but the sentiment has already dropped in a number of areas in the US. Of course, you know, US economic growth is already at risk this year if we don't see an improvement in jobs and payrolls. And of course, let's not forget the impact of DOGE, the expenditure cuts in the federal government, you know, government spending drops. That, of course, also as well is expected to counter some of the inflationary impact in the United States from the tariff increases, but in turn have a negative impact on consumer spending itself. And of course, as well, higher inflation in the US does the same thing. So the risk is now for US interest rate cuts, you know, how many will go ahead this year. I would definitely say to you that the risk for recession in the US has grown quite a bit. And in fact, there are certain leads and lags which make it quite difficult to try and, you know, suddenly prevent a recession if your numbers start to crash. So definitely this is unfortunately something that's going to play into that heightened risk if it doesn't actually materialize itself.
And Just a final one then. In what way should South African policymakers, Annabel, and businesses be strategizing or re-strategizing to mitigate the adverse effects of these tariffs? Where does their head need to be today?
Well, you know, there's this big push towards the global south, Jeremy, and of course, really pushing into areas where they don't have trade restrictions against us or such significant trade restrictions. Let's not forget as well that in Europe, the CBAM restrictions are coming in, which is obviously carbon border mechanism adjustments aimed at putting, again, protectionism on imports into the Europe, into Eurozone that use fossil fuels in their production. Of course, in South Africa, we are 90% coal-fired from the Eskom electricity perspective. So that, of course, would have a very negative effect on South Africa as the bulk of our manufactured goods go into Europe. So all of these really do obviously require some reprocessing, as you said, some changes in thoughts and orientations for producers and exporters in South Africa. Look, obviously, already we've been hamstrung by the inability to export because of Transnet's problems, the huge freight crisis that we actually have as well. And the president says we could see 4% stronger growth if we didn't have that. So that on its own has actually provided a blockage. Clearing that blockage, we want to be sure that we have somewhere to export to. And that's where some of this reorientation needs to take place. As the US really starts to build up the trade war, South Africa could find good opportunities elsewhere in the world, particularly in the global south, as we said. And, you know, that trade relations with China, India, and all of those countries are quite important to South Africa. Already the bulk of our commodities obviously go into the Asian markets. So there is going to be a reorientation of global trade, as I said earlier, and similarly for South Africa as well. If these persist, of course, the America First trade policies, the latest tariff adjustments on liberalization day in the US, the president himself has actually said that they could go up or down, and they're subject to further change. So there's still unpredictability.
Annabel Bishop, Chief Economist at Investec, thank you very much indeed.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, in what I think is a significant escalation of diplomatic tensions, the United States, you would have read, has suspended all military assistance and cooperation with South Africa. It follows an executive order by President Trump and affects key programs such as the International Military Education and Training and Foreign Military Financing and Foreign Military Sales Initiatives. The suspension also mandates the recall of South African military personnel currently training in the United States. So I want to get some expert analysis and insight into these developments. Dean Wingren is with us. He's a seasoned defense analyst and journalist, extensive experience in military affairs. Dean, a very warm welcome. So the immediate operational impacts of the suspension on the SANDF, what are they?
Yes, it's not going to be as impactful as one might think. There is close cooperation between America and the U.S. military and the South African National Defense Force. But on a day-to-day basis, there won't be any material impact. I think the first person to feel the impact will be the solitary South African student who's currently on a training course in the US. And of course, that person will have to come home immediately. I don't think there's an opportunity for South Africa to say to the US military, please, we will pay, you know, for the student to continue. I don't think that will work out, and thus that solitary student will be coming back to South Africa. But it will have further ongoing implications on further training, because America has a history of sponsoring the simulator training for our Hercules transport aircraft, who then fly to the States to undergo annual sim training. And although that hasn't really happened in the past few years, that's more on the Defence Force itself, with internal politics within the South African National Defence Force, that has prevented our pilots from going to America. But the other impact that it might have is that there's a joint exercise shared accord between the American military and the South African military that's due to take place in August in Bloemfontein. And although planning for that exercise is still ongoing, that could be stopped at any time going forward.
Dean, looking into the future, could a suspension like this then compromise South Africa's ability to participate, for instance, in regional peacekeeping missions?
It could, in that the executive order and the State Department has made it clear that they will not fund any new peacekeeping operations that involve South Africa. And if there are any currently funded peacekeeping missions that South Africa is involved with, South Africa must be excluded before the Americans will sponsor that. I'm not aware of any that the Americans do sponsor South Africa directly for peacekeeping operations. The only one that might have an impact is the UN MONUSCO mission in the DRC. And that is where America sponsors the UN generally and peacekeeping missions generally. And the UN then kind of allocates that money to the MONUSCO mission. So that might have an implication. That mission is coming to an end in October this year. So, and as you know, the SADC mission, the SAMI DRC mission, that is in the process of scaling down anyway. But that was not sponsored by the Americans.
Do you think there are steps or should steps be taken by the government to mitigate the effects of the suspension and restore some semblance of military cooperation with the United States? Or do you think that that ship has already sailed?
In a sense, the ship has sailed. The one good thing about this declaration now by the Americans is that foreign military sales that are funded by South Africa is not affected. So that means that will be mainly the Hercules transport aircraft. It's American manufactured by Lockheed. And although they're well over 50 years old, South Africa still buys spares from the Americans. And of course, that is funded by South Africa. So the spares, if South Africa has the money from our meager defense budget, we are still able to purchase those spares. So it won't impact the servicing of the transport aircraft. But going forward, it's just my personal view is that the Trump administration has a particular mindset. They've made a decision. And I don't think much from what South Africa can do now can change that in the short term. But any further negative commentary coming from South Africa could make it worse. But I don't think anything can change the minds to make it better in the short term.
And just a final one, and perhaps from a more geopolitical perspective, do you think there's a risk that the suspension is inevitably going to lead to a realignment of South Africa's military partnerships?
Well, South Africa already has a history of looking east. They've got increasing their ties, both politically, commercially, culturally, and military, with both China and with Russia, both of which are, China certainly is a staunch adversary. The Americans view China as their primary adversary. The relationship with Russia will be quite complicated because, depending on your political persuasion, you can view either the Americans as supporting Russia or not. But despite South Africa's declarations that they're neutral, I think there's still a wide perception out there that South Africa is a friendly nation towards Russia. And so that certainly does give opportunities for other countries to increase their ties with South Africa and should and give them opportunities for giving aid. Russia doesn't have a big history of investment in South Africa, doesn't have a big history of providing aid, but China does have a history of providing aid and support to South Africa, and it's also got a very large commercial ties. It's one of the biggest trading partners of South Africa, so there's a huge opportunity for China to increase its influence, not only with South Africa, but in the whole of Africa.
And I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed. That is Dean Wingren, a defense analyst and writer. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And that's also MoneyWeb at midday for today. Just a reminder of our online poll today: is the government of national unity falling apart? What do you think happens next? It either survives, a reconfiguration is coming, or there's a collapse ahead. All the trust is broken. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.